Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who stab ground cloth.
We're in a stabby kind of mood, are we?
Oh boy, am I. Oh boy. Mm-hmm. I will say, I've heard from a couple of people in the past week encouraging us to have guests other than reproduction samplers and cross stitchers, and we've had quite a few lately, and trying to get other people in other stitching techniques, and working on it, folks. Trust me, trying to get as much variety as we can. If you have suggestions, and many have made suggestions, and believe me, I don't ignore them. I send something to everybody. So if you have suggestions, or if you are a designer or teacher or someone along those lines and you're interested in doing a podcast, it's quite all right to volunteer yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
Quite all right to do that. Matter of fact, Sunday's guest, Shauna Brooke from SBT Stitches, she wrote to us and said, hey, if you're interested in talking to me, I'd love to do a show. Yep, we do. So
yes, ma'am.
Yeah, if you're interested, it's a lot of fun to do, and you don't have to do any prep. We just talk about what you do every day. So if you're interested, volunteer yourself. If you know people who would do them or you'd like to hear, let us know. Many have. I keep trying. I have to send out about 5 or 6 to get one. So please do. Please do. We'll take all the help. I'm frustrated. Well, I'm frustrated on many fronts today, but you know, it's the way it goes. I followed the Nicola Parkman suggestion of buying an architect's tube to carry my, scroll bars in.
Okay.
You know, with linen on them.
So yeah, I went, so what's the difference between an architect's tube and like the tube you would buy a poster in?
Well, the architect tube that I bought, probably not much, but the architect tube I bought is 4 inches across, so I can put the scroll bars in and the two supporting things from my Millennium frame with the linen on them. Oh,
not disposable. I'm thinking like something you would mail.
Oh, no. This is not disposable. This is plastic with screw on lids and a strap to put over your shoulder. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I bought one at an art supply store, and it's one that telescopes so that, because I have two lengths of scroll bars, and so I wanted one that I could make exactly the length of the scroll bar so they aren't bouncing up and down all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I bought one when I was in St. Louis, and then I had it with me when we went to Sassy Jack's.
Yeah, I remember it now.
Yes, and very effective at hauling the piece and protecting it. And I wedged in some plastic bags and stuff to keep it from bouncing around. And a little tip. Okay, I'll come to the little tip in a minute, right?
Okay.
So, yeah, because I'm going to get the story all screwed up. So I picked it up when we got done stitching on the first day, and I took it out of the car, held it by the strap, and was going to carry it into the bed and breakfast we stayed at.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I know, the tube collapses and the lid pops off. And I almost...
It telescoped?
It untelescoped, yeah. And I almost dumped my Sarah Brazier linen scroll rods and everything out on gravel and dirt. Was very close. And so the suggestion is, if you're going to buy one of these things, and I don't know what brand I got, but it has little grooves, and you telescope it out and then you turn it, and it, you know, little bumps go into grooves to hold it at the length, but there's nothing that locks it. And when you pick it up by the strap, apparently it works its way loose and then it just collapses and the lids pop off. Which is, you know, it's just not what I had in mind.
It didn't tube, is what you're saying.
Right. So now I can't carry it by the strap, and I have to be very careful and gentle and hold it horizontally. And so I'm going to call the company. It was $20. You know, it wasn't like it was a $2 thing. I'm going to call the company and see what I can do. But anyway, if you're buying one of those tubes, make sure it's going to stay at the length that you set it at, because mine doesn't, and I'm not happy about it.
Mm.
But it's an excellent idea. It really
could
is.
You, so just as a rescue, as a you have it now, and in case of nothing else, I'm thinking rescue tape. So remember the old silicone
yes.
tape? If you use that to wrap around it, so that it doesn't, you know, because that rescue tape, what it is it's silicone tape, so it sticks to itself but doesn't really stick to other things. It's really good for wrapping stuff. So you could make a loop of that, and it would sort of hold right at the point where it telescopes so that it wouldn't allow it to do so.
Now, that's worth a try, because my initial thought was, all right, I'm going to wrap duct tape around it. And it's like, oh, really? You know, how tacky
is
that?
You have to peel, right? If you want to make it a different length, you have to peel it. The rescue tape, you could just kind of fold it back, telescope it to where you want it, and then let it snap to where, you know, back down again, and then it'll stay.
That's an excellent idea. That's an excellent idea. I'm going to try that, because I do have some rescue tape. So, good idea. Because I really like, I mean, it's an excellent device for hauling, you know. It protects it, keeps it dry, all the things. But, of course, the one I buy, and I thought I was getting a good one, but apparently not. So,
well, I mean, it's a good feature, the idea that you know, you can make it the length that you want. I mean, that was a good thought.
Yes.
It's just a faulty.
Yeah.
You know.
Faulty design.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's my crank about that. But then which is why we're stabbing cloth this week. You know, all these little things are just under my skin. But a good thing, a successful thing. Now, if you go to Best Buy or someplace similar, or I'm sure you can get them on Amazon, because you can get everything on Amazon, you can buy these these Velcro straps. They're about, maybe 6 inches long. And they have a little cloth tab on them, and then it's a Velcro. They're designed for wrapping around cords, so you can bind up a cord and hold it and put it in a bag or whatever, and it's removable. Well, I have several of them because I use them for a lot of things.
Yeah, they're like zip ties, but zip ties that don't stay.
Right. So it's like Velcro cloth ribbon, and they come in different colors. Okay, so they're very, very handy, and I keep them around a lot. What I did when I had my two scroll rods is the Millennium Frame has holes where the side pieces go into. So I took two of those Velcro straps and fed them through the holes at the ends of the scroll rods, and then closed the Velcro. And that worked out great for holding the two scroll rods together and holding the linen so that it wouldn't get all wrinkly and get loose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That worked terrific. So that's a suggestion. And I would think that for a lot of scroll rods, you could just simply wrap them around the rod, the pair of rods.
Yeah.
But that, you know, and they're clean. You know, there's no tape, no glue, no nothing. It's just Velcro cloth. Mm-hmm. That you can use. So I would suggest that if you're carting around scroll rods, that you can use that. I mean, there's a lot of things you can use. You could wrap bungee cord around or any number of things. But those are just a real nice thing, and they're cheap. You know, you buy half dozen for a couple of bucks. So
yeah. Okay, so I have a question then. So working on large pieces and traveling with them has brought up an issue. So you're working on a scroll frame, and I'm working on another, you know, the same large piece, but working on a hoop. Actually, I have it hooped up, and I'm really enjoying working on the hoop much better than on the scroll bars. For me, it just makes a lot more sense, except for one thing, and that is that because it's such a large piece, you end up with all this extra fabric. So I can roll the fabric and I can pin it, or I can magnet it together, or I can do all manner of things to keep it rolled. But my question is, what do people do to keep it clean? because if I want to, you know, take it around, or, you know, if I wanted to travel with it, or, you know, I could make the piece workable as far as, you know, being able to take it with me somewhere to work on, if I could wrap the fabric, you know, well enough and keep it covered, but I don't want to take it anywhere without going somewhere. So the only thing that I can think to do is either do something kind of crazy and probably not the best thing in the world with saran wrap around the edges, or make sort of like a steering wheel cover. So if you this is the best way I can describe what I'm thinking of doing. Imagine a steering wheel, and if you have an old steering wheel, if you ever get a steering wheel cover, it's basically like a big giant donut,
right?
That's hollow, like a bicycle tire, right? Or right. like any kind of tire. So what I was thinking of doing is making something like that out of fabric, and then having the inner rim of that, so the part that would be on the inside, be elastic and about the same size as the hoop that I was working on, with some give in the fabric so that it could kind of stretch around the outside, because you don't want it to cover the back, because then you can't stitch it. So if I could use some sort of like jersey material or something like that, and then elastic, maybe that would work.
Well, people make that very thing for Q-snaps.
Ah, yes, I've seen that.
Yes, right. For Q-snaps. And I mean, a lot of people use them. But for embroidery hoop, for a hoop with extra fabric, I could see how that could work. But it might be a little more cumbersome than the ones they make for Q-snaps, so.
Right. Well, but Q-snaps, you would encounter the same issue with this, where if you wanted to, the problem is not so much that, you know, Q-snaps, if it's covering the edge of the Q-snap, you're assuming that the piece, if it's needlepoint or whatever it is about the same size as the Q-snap, right? Because you're not moving the frame around.
Roughly, so imagine, yeah.
Right? So imagine if you had a piece that was, let's say, let's just make something up, okay? So let's imagine that you have a piece that's 24 inches by 24 inches, and you want to use an 8-inch square Q-snap because you have a really good reason to do so. I don't know what the reason is, but let's just say you do. Well, because doing a 24-inch by 24-inch Q-snap is
ridiculous.
Really unwieldy.
It's ridiculous,
perhaps,
yes.
That's a good reason. Okay, so let's say you want to use an 8-inch by 8-inch, which is rather small, but it gives you the idea. So now if you're working in the top left corner, for example, on the side, the right and the bottom sides, you're going to have a lot of fabric. So the top and the top and the left side are going to be, you know, you'll have your nice little sort of shower cap that fits around. But on the other side, it's going to have to give a little bit because you're going to have a lot of extra fabric.
Right.
So that's why I'm thinking it would have to almost be made out of something that has a little bit of give to it so that it could flex around this fabric, or you would just end up having to make a new one for every project.
Yes, which would be silliness.
Right. And the thing is that unless it's waterproof, you still are risking, that's good for keeping off sort of dust and dirt and grime, but it's certainly not going to keep off the, you know, the spilled something, or, you know, not that I would ever do that, like this morning or whatever. but like that sort of thing, like
right.
it's not, I would want to make it almost out of something like kind of like shower cap material. That's a thin plastic that has some give to it, because shower caps have elastic too.
Right. Yeah. I've not seen anything for embroidery hoops, you know, for that, mm-hmm. for that kind of a situation. It seems like people just kind of roll it up and hold it or something like that. I've not seen anything. The only thing I've ever seen is for the Q-snaps.
I think the same thing should apply. I think the same, yeah. Because it doesn't even need to be square, right? Because the Q-snap thing is probably just a big round donut anyway. It's just a big long piece of fabric with elastic on it.
Right. Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah.
So why couldn't you just use the same thing?
Don't know. You'd think you could.
So basically, I should just go downstairs on my sewing machine and make it.
Give it a whirl and see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone will have a suggestion. Because see, the only thing...
And that's why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah, the only thing...
other people do.
The only thing I've seen the people I've seen on floss tube, it seems like they just hold the cloth. But I know what you mean. Holding the cloth, at some point you're just getting your grimy hands on it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and even if they're clean, you're just getting, body oils are going to get on there no matter what.
It's just in the way, if nothing else, you know.
Yeah.
So I end up just rolling the fabric and pinning it. But it just becomes cumbersome, and it's asking for trouble.
Yep.
You know, you're asking for something to snag or something, you know, I will find a way to spill something.
Yes.
Or do something. So
right.
I think for me, unless somebody, and that's why I brought it up, to see what other people do to protect the work that they're working on that's not in the hoop. Because I really liked the idea that somebody had, and I forget where it came from. It might have been Mary Corbett, and it might have been for a different reason. So what she had done, and if it isn't Mary, I apologize, is when you hoop something, you put saran wrap over the top, and then you just open up the area that you're going to stitch, and then that keeps the rest of the cloth in the hoop area clean.
Right.
And that's great.
And that is, yeah, that's been, that's, Mary has a thing on that, yes.
Yeah, I like that. I think it has pros and cons. I think for surface embroidery, it would work better than counted pieces, because to try to, if you lose your place and you want to count, trying to count through saran wrap would be
yeah,
a nightmare. So I think that maybe it would be a little bit beneficial, and maybe not so much for, especially for somebody like me that loses count all the time. But there has to be something for all that extra fabric. So I think I'm just going to have to make something.
I think it's worth a try. Because, see, the only thing I've seen other than just holding it in your lap is Michelle Garrett uses needle minders, where she'll roll them up. She stitches in hand most of the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so she'll roll them up and then use needle minders to hold the rolled part together. So
right,
it isn't flopping all over. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll either use pins or I'll use my super powerful magnets to, you know, to hold the fabric together. And that works great.
Right.
I like using the magnets because then you don't have to go through fabric.
Right. But it doesn't protect the fabric from outside
contaminants.
That's
exactly that's what I'm looking for, something to protect the fabric so it doesn't get dirty.
Yeah. See, I'd not thought, the Q-snap, but I'd not thought about, it gets it. Because like your Sarah Brazier is a classic example. That's a big piece of cloth. And if you're stitching with a hoop, then, where does all that other cloth go? Does it just hang out there waiting for somebody to walk by and spill something, or you to spill something, or the dog to show up and lick it? Or
Right. It's just unwieldy, you know, if you could, if nothing else. So there's benefit to having, you know, extra fabric in this fabric shower cap that I'm envisioning. But then I also can imagine there's also benefit to having it be a little bit tight too, because that would hold it, you know, close to the hoop so that the hoop becomes a little bit more easy to handle without having this, you know, lump of fabric.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you have it. People will come up with ideas, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Or what they actually do won't be an idea. Mm-hmm. This is what I do. So yes. Yes. And along those lines of ideas, I think this may be one of my new favorite ideas.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm going to try it. So Angela Flannery Sawyer on Stitch Mania posted this and posted a picture. And I forgot to ask her if it was okay to use her picture. So I'll ask her and see if I can get it in at least the video and on the page. But anyway. Let me start out. I have for particularly cross stitch, but samplers or anything, I have this thing, they've been around forever, a Paco, P-A-K-O needle organizer. And it's like an 8-inch long triangular plastic device. And the front side has foam in it, and then you have these strips with squares on them. And you mark the strip with the symbol for your chart. So if it's a blue thread, you mark a question mark because that's what's on the chart. And you mark it up. And so if you have multiple colors going, then you can thread needles and stick them in next to the symbol. And it's very handy and very helpful, particularly if you're just doing little motifs where you might use half a length of thread. Then you can just stick it in there and come back to it the next time you do it. Like Sarah Brazier, those little bees. You could do a little bee and then come back and do another one with the rest of the thread.
Without having to go and wrap it back around a bobbin or something.
Right. And then I have a little plastic bag that I just slip over it when I'm done stitching, and right over the needles, so the needles are right in there. And then there's these little cards that you get, several of them. So when you're done with a project, you can just throw the cards away and then the next time set up another one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when I get the border all established with Sarah Brazier, I'm going to break that thing out and I'm going to set up a bunch of needles, because I always have a ton of needles for anything because I'm just weird like that. So I'm just going to set up a bunch of needles with the different threads and stick them in there with the symbols. And then I'll be able to stitch right away without threading needles.
Mm-hmm.
But this from Angela Flannery Sawyer is a different approach, which I think is really worth trying. And I'm going to do it with the border, the X's that make up the fine border around Sarah Brazier that are just the one color. So I'm just going to read so everybody gets it right, or so I get it right, not everybody else, but so I get it right. So I'm just going to read. So what she does is she says, I hate threading needle every time I finish a thread. This is why I love single color stitching. So what she does is she takes 5 minutes to thread 10 to 15 needles that I'm good to go for several hours without disrupting the flow. So anyway, what she does is she cuts several lengths, has several lengths of the same color.
Mm-hmm.
And then she threads 10 to 15 needles, all with the same color of thread. And then she has a piece of felt that she has cut 2 1/4 by 3 1/2 inch rectangle. And the threaded needles she puts at the top of this rectangle. And then when she finishes a needle, when she uses that length of thread, then she puts the empty needle in the bottom of the rectangle. So it keeps all of her needles on one piece of felt. And that way she's just like a machine gun then.
Right.
You know, she just thread's done, needle in the bottom, pick up another one, keep stitching. She isn't stopping to thread a needle after every length is finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really great idea for adding a little efficiency and just keeping momentum going. You know, you're stitching, you're flying, there's a good TV or good audio book or fiber talk that you're listening to, and you have 15 needles, and you're going to do all one color for some time, and you just bang your way through, and they're all threaded. I thought that was a really good idea, because the Paco thing, you know, it's set up so that you can do multiple colors and not, but this is set up where I'm doing one color a lot, and I just set myself up with a whole bunch of loaded needles and just keep going.
Yeah, and it's funny. So I don't know that these things exist and these little things. So I'm finding that I do some of these things kind of the same way, just by accident. So
yep.
with the brazier piece, or even other pieces that use a lot of, you know, where you're going to be using a lot of one color, especially if you're using 6-stranded thread, what I've been doing is I'll have 2 needle minders, one on each side. Usually my left is the one that takes all the threaded needles and the right is the one with the non-threaded needles. And so if I'm going to cut a length of thread, now I've got 6 strands, I'll separate all 6. Thread all 6, and all 6 needles go on the left. And then I'll stitch one. When I'm done with it, throw the needle on the right. Then I go to thread number 2, and then just keep going that way. Because for me, it's the same thing. I don't like to stitch motifs as much as I like to stitch to the end of a thread. That's where I'll stop.
Mm-hmm.
Because it bothers me to have to stop and start threads unless it makes sense to do so. So if I can keep going with one thread, I will. So that's kind of what I've been doing. But that said, I was running into the trouble of exactly what you're saying, where you have multiple threads, multiple needles threaded with, you know, half a thread.
Right.
That you don't know what to do with.
Yep. Well, that's so where the, that's where the, it. Yeah, that's where the Paco device comes in.
Mm-hmm.
That's very handy for that. And someone else showed in that post that Angela had, someone else showed a card. It looked like it had a magnetic strip on it.
That, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that you could write at the above the strip, you could make boxes and have your symbol for you. So you do the same thing as the Paco device, mm-hmm. only it was just a flat card. And it looked like it was a magnetic strip that would hold your needles. And so that's a really good idea. You know, for someone who's really talented at gluing magnets.
I was just thinking that. But, you know? But the thing I was thinking, though, was... what I would want to do, though, is I'm sitting here thinking, I'm trying to figure out what would I make the bottom piece out of. I wouldn't want to make it out of card, paper card, because then I have magnets glued to paper that I'd have to then throw away and make something else. I'd almost want to make it like a dry erase or something, or something that I could write on with Sharpie that I could then take alcohol later and wipe off. So some kind of plastic thing.
Yeah. Yeah, dry erase would work great.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't have to glue the magnets. You could, if you had it thin enough, you could just put another magnet on the back side.
True. Yeah. You could just actually take a, that is brilliant. There you go. So you just take an index card and you write your symbols on, and then you just put a magnet on the front and a magnet on the back.
Yep. And put your needle there.
There you go.
Yep. So
very smart.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought that Angela had a really good idea for just keeping the momentum going. And by having multiple needles, however you stored them, and she has a real nice system with a piece of felt for doing that. And I just thought that was a really good idea, and mm-hmm. and I'm going to try it. And then I was thinking, if you were really adept at starting and ending with pin stitches, particularly on fine linen, starting at any pin stitches from the front, boy, you could really go.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't be turning anything over or anything. You'd just keep flying. That's you can make some significant progress in a hurry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. Thank you, Angela Flannery Sawyer, for that idea. A good one.
I like it.
Let's see. Oh, this was, I love this one. The somebody in Stitch Mania, well, there was two things here. Somebody in Stitch Mania posted, what do you say to someone who says cross stitch isn't for boys? So that started a long discussion about that whole aspect of the hobby. And so I was interested in that for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just went on and on and on, and, you know, whose business is it, and so on and so forth. And I, you know, yeah, whatever. I am sensitive to that because, and the consensus was, hey, it, you know, that person's out of line. Any of this stuff should be, if someone's interested, they should be able to do it, you know,
right.
without judgment. But the one that stood out for me, and I love this, and of course, then you were getting examples of men who stitch. And Rosie Greer always comes up. You know, I tried once to connect with Rosie Greer to get him on the show, and, mm-hmm. and got no response because he's still alive. And I just think it'd be fun because, you know, anytime men needle work of any kind comes up, it's always, well, Rosie Greer did it, you know.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, whatever. But Linda England Hardy posted, I thought this was so cool. A story from the Telegraph that was written by Matthew Day in January 2012. The title is The British POW Who Stitched an Insult to Hitler. And so I'll just read it. A POW, while whiling away the war in German prison camp, delivered a defiant message insulting Hitler through the apparently innocuous skill of embroidery. And it shows a picture of what he stitched. And it was all cross stitch. Major Alexis Kozdali. That's pretty good. I'll take that. Kozdali. Yeah. Who was taken prisoner in 1941, had turned to embroidery as a way of protecting his sanity against the tedium of POW life, but he also found it provided a means of covert resistance. an innocent-looking tapestry stitched by the officer in December 1941, bears the rather bland text stating the name and location of its creator and date. But in the border surrounding the text, Major Kazdali also stitched a series of dots and dashes, which in Morse code spelt out "God Save the King" and "F Hitler." And unaware of the hidden message, but impressed with the captive officer's needlework, the Germans even put that on display. I thought that was just brilliant. That's just brilliant. And I'll put a link on the page for this podcast so you can see it, because it's really very cool. But that I thought, what a...
It's like Madame Bovary in Tale of Two Cities.
Right, right. Yep. And, you know, and I'm sure it was, you know, look at that guy with the needle and thread and laughing at him and whatever. And he's getting just that personal little something that you need just to keep from going completely nuts. And
yeah. You know what? Somehow I feel like when you're a prisoner of war, having people laugh at you is not the biggest worry that you have.
Right. Exactly. Yes. So I just thought that was just brilliant. Yep. Got my little say in here, and then they post it and show it for, put it up for people to see. And yeah, look what a prisoner did. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just good. And it looked like he was a pretty good stitcher too. But I wondered where he got the cloth and the thread, though.
Yeah, that was the thing that stood out to me, was that they would allow such a thing. But maybe it would just, you know, kept... It may be that there were so many prisoners that it was just a matter of allowing people to do some things that kept them easier to manage.
Yeah, yeah, it very well could be, yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was... and that kind of got me going down a mental path of this is kind of one of the few hobbies where if you're sick or injured and have to stay at home and, you know, keep your leg propped up or whatever, this is one of the few hobbies where you go, okay, fine.
Just, yeah, I'm good.
I'm good. Yep. How many weeks? I can do it. Yep. That's so that, yeah, I thought that was, but I mean, yeah, certainly different to have a sore shoulder than to be a POW. But so that was a nice highlight in that thread about boys stitching, and I think that's getting better, though, for younger people who are less encumbered by the the social things that I grew up with, because a lot of that for young people is just a non-issue. They don't even think about it.
No, they don't really care. You know, some people will care, and there's enough people that don't care that it can be overcome if somebody wants to do it. You know, like I know Jeremy's 15 now, but you know, if he were to pick up stitching in a group of girls, well, I'll tell you exactly, because Jeremy is the type of kid, it wasn't stitching, but just in general, you know, he would hang out with the girls doing like a girl hobbyish type thing. And yeah, did he get picked on by the boys? Yes, he did. But then when they got, you know, this is when they were 12 and 13. And then when they got to be 14 and 15, and all of a sudden all the boys wanted to hang out with the girls because they wanted girlfriends, guess who was first in line?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Somebody already had, you know, kind of a connection there, you know, yep. And somebody already knows all the girls' moms, and, you know, because they, yeah, so, mm-hmm.
One for Jeremy.
Well, and, you know, in order to do that, though, he had to be picked on a lot for hanging out with the girls, so.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that.
Yes.
It's funny how, you know, a year can change from, you know, hanging out with the girls, the worst thing ever, and there must be something wrong with you, to please, can I come hang out with the girls?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That kind of happens overnight, doesn't it? Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Go, Jeremy. You win. So, you know, I was thinking the other day about needlework shops. And what brought it to mind was this past weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, my sister and I, who have done two other bike tours, week-long bike tours, and last year we didn't get a chance to do one, so this year we were able to get a four-day trip in from, she took the ferry from Michigan across to Milwaukee, and then we rode 200 miles across Milwaukee and then, or across Wisconsin and then back to our house. And then I took her back to the ship, to the ferry. But one of the bike stores we stopped in, and bike touring is fun. We learned early in our first trip that we did, we had planned out 70, 80 mile days, because to ride 70 or 80 miles in, you know, 5 or 6 hours or so is for us is not that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summer, it was in the summer. But what happened was we got caught in, it was really hot that first year. And we ended up that we were just chasing water, riding in the heat and getting to the hotel to get out of the heat and to shower and sleep for the next day.
Right. And exhausted.
Yeah.
And miserable.
And, yeah. And by the third day, we looked at each other and said, this isn't fun. We're idiots. We're riding too many miles a day. And I had done research that 50 miles a day is typically what people will do. And 50 miles, I mean, I can go out in the morning and knock off 50 miles in 3.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you think, well, what's the point of that? If we get up by 7 and we're done by 10, then what do we do all day, you know?
Have a vacation?
Well, then that's when we realized we're idiots. Instead of doing all these miles, we ride 50 miles, but we do what we're supposed to do, and that is every little burg and every little town we stop in, and we check it out. And we have ice mm-hmm. cream or have a lemonade or just sit on a park bench and watch people or whatever. And that first year, once we started doing that, then it became fun because there was no pressure. We were riding our bikes all day. We didn't care how fast we rode, and we got to see the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that first year was Route 66 from St. Louis all the way back to Chicago.
Nice.
And you know, you can imagine how many little towns there are along Route 66. So we got to see history and enjoy it. And that was when we woke up. So now it's 50 miles, 50 to 60 miles is the target every day. Because then we know by late afternoon, if we diddled around all day long, we're still in late afternoon, get showers, get our clothes washed out, have dinner, and then relax for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the stops we made last weekend was at a bike shop. And this is a long way to go to get to my little short story, but sorry about that. We stopped at a bike shop in this little town in the middle of nowhere, halfway across Wisconsin. And we walked in, and you know, we're cyclists, so we're curious about what they have and what a bike shop is doing in this little town. And it was a gigantic bike shop, and obviously very busy and very active bike shop with a bunch of racing people because there were racing bibs hanging over, you know, on the walls and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing, and this is where the needlework shop comes in, the cool thing was they had a great big cooler full of beer and a great big sitting area. And the guy said, have a seat, have a beer, you know?
Nice.
And I, you know, beer was, it wasn't expensive. They weren't making money off of beer. They were just, it was just a way to draw people in to the shop and to hang out. And, you know, if they buy something this time or next time they look at bikes, who knows what happens. And I thought, you know, there it is. Now, you know, I'm sure that needlework shops will have like coffee on stitching days.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder how many shops have, you know, a cooler with lemonade or, you know, a bunch of beverages or maybe wine or something. I wonder how many, because I haven't seen much of that, seen any of that.
No.
And I thought, you know, there's another way to bring people in is to offer that.
You know what they should do? They should partner up with a wine store and do wine tasting.
Oh, there you go.
In the needlework shop.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's what, was it Jessica from Lyset Designs with her trunk shows? You know, she goes around to different places. She doesn't have people come to a shop. She goes around with her things to and has little events.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, why not? Why not? Partner up with a wine store. Yeah. Have a wine tasting and stitching thing. Move your needlework around.
Yeah.
That would be fun. And clubs could do that too. You know, stitching guilds could do that too. This week we're meeting at thus and such, and they're going to have wine tasting or chocolate, you know. Right. Or,
just make sure that the wine is not on the same side as the stitching. That's just pro tip there.
Yeah, pro tip from experience.
Yes.
But yeah, of course, there's always that risk that, you know, that, but you can work that out. But, you know, but I just thought that bike shop had just a really good idea. Because, yeah, there's, I mean, there was a big seating area, and you could see that on some nights, you know, I'm sure a bunch of cyclists would show up, or guys out for, guys or women out for a ride. Let's stop at the shop and have a beer.
Yeah.
And rather than a bar, rather than a restaurant, we're stopping in the bike shop.
Yeah.
And it was right on the bike trail, right on a bike trail that went for miles and miles across Wisconsin. And I just thought that was brilliant. Really good move. Yep. And it wasn't just Budweiser. They had a big, you know, they had a big cooler. They had craft beers. They had all kinds of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't just come in and have a Schlitz or a Budweiser or a Pabst Blue Ribbon. It was come in and have some, you know, some good beer.
Yeah.
And, I just offended half the population, but, but so I just thought that was brilliant. And then, yeah, I started having these thoughts about needle, because that was the other thing is then when we left and, you know, we're riding on a bike trail across Wisconsin. So you know, your mind just gets to wander. And I just got to thinking, wow, how cool would that be for needlework stores to do that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So,
yeah, partner up with other businesses that are trying to bring people in to shop. Really?
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So there's my business tip of the week.
Okay.
Yeah. There we have it. I think so. I think that's going to be it, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Two sayings I found. Two sayings. One kind of applies, but the other is excellent. It's hell getting old, but it beats the alternative. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And then teach your child the love of fabric, and they'll never have money for drugs or anything else, for that matter.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those are the two sayings I found this week. That's all I got.
Well, then.
Shauna Brooke, SBT Stitches, comes up Sunday, paints needlework designs, young, attracting the younger stitchers. So another one who is looking to reach out and connect with young stitchers. So anxious to, we haven't recorded that one yet, so anxious to talk to her and hear what she has to say. Coming up Sunday. If you know people that we can connect with to be guests, let us know. If you'd like to be a guest, designer, teacher, whatever, you know, speak up. We just might talk to you.
Very good.
You never know.
You never know.
All right. And then we have to have solutions for big clods of fabric outside of outside of hoops. Help Christine.
Yeah. There we go.
All right. That's it. Thanks for listening. All
right. Take care.